Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of The Bog right here on Dave Martell YouTube channel, live every single Monday and Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. I'm going to apologize ahead of time. I'm fighting off this lingering cold, so if my voice sounds a little scratchy, that's why. If you like The Bog, you support The Bog, make sure you go to patreon.com/TheBog and sign up. There's a tier for everybody, $5 all the way up to $50. And there you get a mug, you can get some stickers, you can get RSS feed to listen to the audio of every single show that we do in your car, on your commutes, at the gym, or at work. That is patreon.com/TheBog. Go sign up if you want to help us keep the lights on. If you want to support The Bog another way, make sure you go to shop.spreadshirt.com/BogShop and go check out some sweet merch. White Boy Summer, go get yourself a muscle shirt. Get yourself a cutoff sleeve shirt. Get yourself a summer dress if you're one of the ladies. Or if you are part of the Esoteric Order of Grill Dads, make sure to get yourself a sweet Bog artisan chef apron to wear when you are stoking the sacred coals and grilling up some sweet bratwurst, steaks, or barbecue pork chops when you got your kinfolk all around coming over. That is shop.spreadshirt.com/bogshop. Go check it out. If you want to support a friend of ours, make sure you go to facebook.com/ironagejodish and check out our boy Neil John for some authentic ancient Vedic astrology. It's very, very cool. Go check him out. If you decide to get a reading, make sure to tell him Big Dave sent you. Tell him Big Dave sent you. So, tonight we have a very, very cool show. I have with me my buddy Xavier, who is a novitiate in my kindred. He's going through the probationary period of my kindred, and me and him hang out quite a bit. Cool thing about Xavier is he is a professional typologist in the school of Jungian typology. And tonight we are going to talk all about Jungian typology, its origins, the typing that he did on every member of the Bog panel. We're going to get into some of its pragmatic possibilities to be used for things like tribe building and organization and things like that. And then we're going to get into some other things as well. But what's going on, Tristan and Andre, my co-hosts?
I'm doing pretty good today, Dave. Interested to talk about our topic.
Excellent. So, my buddy Xavier, what's going on, bub?
What's going on, guys? Really happy to be here. I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. Our pleasure. So, let's get right into it. You know, when I first heard about, like, I guess it's called MBTI, Myers-Briggs personality things or whatever, and I see on people's, like, Instagram things or whatever, it says, like, you know, INF, whatever, and it's like, oh, I'm so quirky and cute because of my personality type. So I thought it was corny. You know what I mean? I thought it was just, like, horoscopes for Zoomers, right? So I didn't really get into it. I didn't really take a second look at it. I just thought it was cringe and weird and something that I wouldn't be interested in. Well, Mr. Xavier, you gave me a full typing with a technique that you have developed. You have developed your own system of figuring out people's cognitive functions, which is what Jungian typology is. And you blew me away with it. You blew away all of us on the Bog panel. So let's get right into it. What is typology and how did it come about?
Well, first let me preface by saying thank you so much for the kind words. To begin, psychological types is basically like, or let's say MBTI, is basically kind of like a scientific, or not necessarily hard scientific, but a psychological approach to necessarily finding out how you function cognitively within the world. It was first kind of established like loosely through Carl Jung and is like one of the most popular works, Psychological Types, which was actually published in 1921 and then published in English in 1923. Like I said, loosely, he kind of didn't really go into a whole lot, though there is a whole lot within the book. Generally speaking, he's very, you know, especially when he started moving into the archetypes of his like work, of his psychological work, he kind of moved away from like his cognitive function idea. But prior to him, there was actually two females. There was actually Isabel Meyer Briggs and Kathleen Briggs, which are, I believe, mother and daughter, which is actually pretty interesting. Kathleen Briggs began her actually sight into personality in 1917, basically, you know, creating this thing called the Four Temperaments, which was kind of like an introduction to personality all the way back, like, in the early 1900s. After a while, when Jung's work came out, she was like, oh, crap, you know, my stuff isn't, like, up to par with his stuff. And so what she actually did with her daughter was actually kind of take a lot of things from Carl Jung himself and ultimately created some sort of like type indicator system or a method of typing people because she realized that, her like son-in-law, I believe, kind of saw the world in a different way. And so she was very much interested in that. Now, let me also make a disclaimer that MBTI is not a hard science. It's never been a hard science. It's not valid. It's not a lot of it's unfalsifiable. And so a lot of people within the psychological community have really hard critiques about MBTI. With this project I'm working on, I'm trying to distance myself away from this completely and try to go about it in a more accurate / objective way. Through some sort of like tick method that I developed, and we can go into that later if we want. But yeah, that's the general gist of the beginnings of MBTI.
Very cool. We got a guy in here guessing people's types. He says Tristan is INTP. You, Xavier, are INTJ, and he says that I am ISTP.
Okay.
Look, I pity the fool who thinks that Dave Martell is an introvert.
Yeah, I think that's a little off, but, you know.
He was kind of close with some of them.
Kind of close.
Not bad, not bad. I'm giving him a couple points because he's got three of them right.
Yeah.
All right, so yeah, let's go into how you got into typology and your method of typing people.
So basically I started around, let's say 2018 ish.
And you're a young guy now. How old are you now?
I'm 21.
You're 21. Yeah.
So I started getting into this stuff when I was 18. So it's been a few years actually. And, I, at first, you know, I had the same impression of it as you did. It was kind of going into it. I was like, oh geez, there's a lot of freaking, you know, feminine guys you know, women who use this to kind
of
like
a lot of it is very peak white woman. Let's put that out there.
Like Starbucks white woman type thing. Yeah, and it's kind of like I was first turned off from it, and I didn't really look into it that much. But then I started getting into certain spheres of influence within my interests and fields, and you know, eventually I started coming back to psychology and specifically typology or personality typology in and of itself. So this method that I kind of created is actually pretty interesting. I came to it when I was working with when I was working under a system called Objective Personality, which is basically it does the same thing I'm trying to do by stepping away from MBTI, but it goes deeper into trying to make it more scientific, right? It's trying to make it more objective. And they do this through a method called the two-prong method or the double-blind method, which basically entails two external agents testing in completely different rooms, and they see whether or not they get the two types the same of one person. And if so, then it's an accurate typing to them. I kind of want to move away from that. I do things strictly on an empirical basis. If I see that through talking to you in casual conversation or in everyday interaction that you're doing something, saying something, acting in a certain way, behaving in a certain way, I will mark you down as using a certain cognitive function. And this is what I call ticks. I tick you off basically with using a cognitive function.
For instance, during my typology session, he marked everything down as, yeah, that's super autistic.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you're talking about cognitive function and everything like that. For somebody that has no idea what we're talking about at all, what is cognitive function?
Okay, so according to Jung, there are two ways of how we kind of cognize the world. So we can define cognition here in a second, but cognitive functions are basically how we process the world around us, right? These are certain processes that are triggered within our brains or in our minds, either through our, I believe, our subconscious or our personal unconscious. And through this, we can ultimately see, perceive, right, using perception functions, or judge, make decisions in the world using our deciding functions. And so ultimately, just cognitive functions are basically what makes up your personality type. That's all it is.
So my boy PM Graphics, his guess is I am ENTP.
That's very close, actually, because as we'll talk about a little later, you're actually cousins with this type. You're actually cousins with this type. You guys share two of the same functions, but you guys don't share the other two functions.
Okay, so that's what cognition is, or what cognitive function is. So effectively, what you have developed is kind of your own system through behavioral analysis to determine and discern what people's actual, like, what their function is, how they function, how they see the world, how they interpret incoming sensory things, incoming, you know, data, or whatever, however you want to say it. You've developed a way of analyzing their behavior, their reactions, what you say their tics or whatever, and then you go through this list to narrow down and figure out what their functions are, right?
Yeah, so I try to do that as accurate as I can. I do let people know, though, when I'm in these sessions, I'm not always accurate, right? Because when I'm building this system and when I'm going through the motions of the system, you know, there are going to be skewed results. This is just how science works. This is just how trying to maintain an objective air of resonance works. You can't really get outside of that. But specifically, yeah, I pick up on the behaviors of the person, the speech patterns they use, whether or not they react strongly or passionately to certain things I say, you know, how they kind of stop whenever you ask them questions and they think about things, right? That's usually how I go about this. And through that process, yeah, of course, I narrow down what's needed, cognitively speaking, for me to realize what their type is.
Very cool.
And I do have to say that I didn't know this going into the actual typology session, but it was later told to me by Dave that you actually invented the entire typology situation that you were doing with us. And I have to say that I didn't even realize that this wasn't entirely professional, something you'd created your own.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I thank you for that. Yeah. I try to, you know, I'm not certified in psychology. I'm not licensed. I'm not a licensed psychologist nor a psychiatrist, but I try to be as professional and as, to the point as I can. And I try to also, to bear kind of like a controlled state or controlled environment within the setting so that we can kind of, gauge, a certain type of like informal but formalized method of finding out your type and your functions. I try to make it as casual as possible because, again, if you think about it, if I were to type you, sit you down in a white room with all white walls around you, and you're just sitting in a chair, like you have pressure on you, right? You're going to answer in certain ways. You might be in a bad mood that day because you're sitting there in front of me, right? And I take this all into account. I take this onto account.
And you mentioned how you have to do multiple typings to make sure that the results are accurate. Because, you know, as you said, the results could be skewed. That person could be having an off day. They could be, you know, not feeling it. You know, they could be somebody that doesn't do well under pressure. And this could skew results. So you have to do it, you know, three times. And some of these, you know, I mean, you've typed me a few times now. And, you know, I mean, I'm not somebody, I'm the exact opposite. I love pressure. You know, I mean, put me on something where I have to think on my feet, and that's like where I shine, right? So I didn't feel any of this. So I, you know, you were my first test. You're like, you're this type. Like, you knew right away. And when I, that was surprising to me because I, you know, I mean, before we had the conversation, I took a type and it was not that. So why is it that when people take tests on the internet, maybe because that's where most people find their type, they just go and they find MBTI typology test or whatever. A lot of times that's incorrect. Why is that?
So when you self-type, when you go on these personality websites, first and foremost, these aren't actually Jungian typological tests, okay? You will not find out your actual type taking these tests. These tests are actually big five indicators. They're nothing more than that. So you're not going these don't even factor in your cognitive functions. They don't factor in your behaviors. This just factors in what you preference within the world. So this is the white girl version of basically typology, right? The new age version. Whereas you go through also a stage where you take these tests and you go through a stage of confirmation bias and the Barnum effect. Basically, there's something that happens to us cognitively where we want to be who we think we are rather than who we are, right? And so we kind of project or kind of draw in what we want of ourselves rather than taking in what actually is ourselves. So that's why self-typing is like terrible, in my opinion. And you will have to need an external source in order to verify your type, or at least to make it as accurate as possible.
So in order to get an accurate result, you need an external person, a typologist, to sit and watch your cognitive functions in real time.
Or you can even do it this way, right? You have friends. Everybody has friends and families to a certain degree, right? You can literally talk to your friends and family. Do I do this? Do I do this? And see how many people within your close-knit group of friends or family either confirm or deny these said results. Because you can actually create ratios based off of this and come to the conclusion that you definitely do. You might have this function, because everybody else is seeing these kind of trends in you behaviorally.
Okay, so before we go to the next subject, somebody that's they get their type and all that kind of stuff, what can they do with it? What helps them with what use can they get out of getting their type besides, you know, putting it on their little social media profile to be cute?
Yeah, so basically, if you learn your cognitive functions, if you learn how you function within the world and you perceive the world, you judge the world, basically what happens is you can find out what you are weak in terms of your cognition, what you don't know how to do good in. You can learn how to better yourself and grow yourself. And not we're going to get to this in a second, not only yourself and your community, but you can grow yourself into the person that kind of is the most beneficial version of yourself. I believe Jung coined the term individuation for this, but we're not going to go that deep. You know what I mean? But generally speaking, like this is my goal with this is to be specific towards the needs of the community. It's not this personalized, like, oh, I'm going to put it in my Twitter handle and this is what I am now. This is me. That's not what this is. This is a betterment tool. That's what it is. It's a tool. It's a betterment tool and it's a community aid tool as well. That's all it is.
I love it. So we haven't heard from Andre. Andre, come in here. So what did Andre, how did you feel and what was your experience being typed by Xavier?
The experience was fairly interesting for me, and I wanted to bring this up, but he covered it himself, is that the method that he did it was somewhat different. It was more relaxed, somewhat more casual. It felt more like a conversation from side to side instead of a, you know, typical psychologist office, you know, lie down on a futon and I tell you about my problems and you tell me, yeah, you're that type. It's not that. And there was a few interesting quirks with that because there were questions. And I was warned beforehand that there were questions that were somewhat ambiguous and surprising. It's not a question that you would expect to hear from someone who is trying to do a, like a psychological typing on you, but when it was explained to me, it made a lot of sense. And I guess Xavier can probably detail a bit more like on these more strange and unusual questions, but I found it very, it was a very interesting thought, like interesting pattern that led me to like think more about my own behaviors in a more from a, more like a third person perspective, I guess. Like as you mentioned, that you kind of need a second or third person to type you or validate like whatever you're saying, because you have a, I guess you can say in general, everybody has a somewhat warped perception of who they actually are compared to someone else around you, like friends or family, who see you for all those small, tiny quirks that carry a lot of meaning, as it seems.
Yeah, I think I was the only one walking into the test that actually got the result that I thought I was beforehand.
Yeah, it's actually very rare, and I will say this, it's very rare for actually to somebody type to type themselves correctly or to get a type that is correct. Because of the environment of typology, a lot of people, again, go through these self-types, these typing tests or whatever, these quizzes, and they'll get a type that doesn't really resonate with them, but through the confirmation bias that, you know, goes through their mind, they kind of resonate with it, even though it's not true whatsoever. But in relation to the questions that Andre brought up, yeah, the reason I asked those questions and the reason that why they're so ambiguous, right, is because I want to see how you interpret the questions. I want to see how you answer the questions. I don't want to force anything on you. I don't want to force my attitude on you. I don't want to force anything on you. And so when I see how you answer it and I see how you behave when answering it, I can constantly kind of check myself or check you for ticks, right? Check you for ticks, whether or not you have certain cognitive functions in certain slots, right? So that's the only reason I do that.
So Viljammer, and I'm sorry, I can't pronounce your name, says Andre's ISTJ.
That is actually correct. Andre is an ISTJ.
Good job, Dan, bub. This guy's pretty good.
You're good.
Big Andre robot is, energy.
Tristan, shut up.
All right, so let's hop into, now that we kind of talked about where it came from, what it is, how it works, and everything, let's do a little exercise here. How about this? You can tell me if this is kind of off the cuff and you don't feel comfortable, and that's okay. How about you give us one of your questions from your test as an example. We each answer it. And then you give us kind of, you give the audience the result of what that question meant to you.
We could do that. Yeah, we can do that. Definitely. Okay. So basically, one of my go-to questions for each test, I change this up a little bit. So if I type one person, it might not always be the same, this question specifically in this order.
Yeah, let's start with go Tristan, Andre, and then finish with me.
Okay. All right, we can do that. So Tristan, I have this idea of a book. It's about two serial killers meeting each other in really abrupt, uncanny circumstances. Okay, could you come up with at least three different names for this book, and which one you think, or which one you personally like the most?
Right. The first title will be Face to Face. The second title will be A Meeting with Death. And the third title will be Unlikely Brothers.
Okay.
And personally, I think the third option would probably be the best, in the sense that, I don't know, I don't really think any of the other two options were particularly great, but the third one at least gives me a chance to say that the title of it connects to some sort of emotional connection between the people involved, and I think that is a fair title for most people. It immediately draws them in and makes them ask questions about the character and their relation to one another.
Okay. All right. So Dave, it's your turn. Wait, who was second?
Do Andre next. Forgot. Andre.
Okay. Andre. All right. Andre. So there's this new creature that just was discovered, right? it stands on bipedal legs, right? Stands up straight, has a straight back. It's kind of humanoid looking, but it has the face of a bird, right? And its arms are in the shape of it's in the shape of maybe a spear or something. Okay, each arm. Could you come up with a few names for what this kind of creature would be called?
You said it was a creature, bipedal creature, slightly humanoid, bird's head, and spear-like tips on its arms?
Sure, yeah.
Spear hand, obvious.
Okay.
Novus Avia.
Okay.
And Lounger.
Lounger. Okay. All right. And hold up. Let's see. Okay. So, Dave, it's your turn.
Yeah.
I have this invention. Okay. Mm-hmm. You've probably already heard me use this on you, bro. But so there's an ashtray, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this ashtray kind of standing erect from the side of the ashtray is standing kind of this like tube. And out of this tube, if you plug it in, it actually squirts water down into the ashtray to clean it out.
Mm-hmm.
What could be around three names that you could give me? And which one do you think would sell more of?
The Sig Fountain.
Okay.
The Ash Cleaner.
Okay.
I don't know, third one.
Okay. All right. That works. That even works. Okay.
And why do which one do I like the best?
Yeah, and which one do you think would sell the most? Out of those two.
What was the first one I said?
Sig Fountain.
Sig Fountain? Nah, garbage. Let's go with the second one, which was the Ash Cleaner. Because in the name, it says it. You know exactly what it is. It's rememberable. It's that's it. That's the money right there.
Okay. All right.
Guy says splash tray. Why did I think of that?
So basically, starting from Tristan again... Tristan, you answered these questions in a very introverted manner. You're basically internalizing before you even reacted to the question. So what that basically means is through proactivity of analyzing the question, you kind of were dipping down into the depth of NI, which is introverted intuition, and trying to kind of pick apart trends and patterns that you kind of have made in the past. And some of these are abstract, right? And you kind of put them together to ultimately solidify this notion of like all three of these names. Now, you took a little bit of time when answering all three of these. So usually when you have an extroverted intuitive person, any user, what they'll do is they'll answer it immediately because they just react. Whereas somebody who has NI is proactive in their approach to cognition or perception. Okay. And you also utilized FI in there because you appeal to what you thought other people would value because you also valued it. That'd be something there. Andre, you picked your top three Birdman things names were Spearhand, Novus Avia, and Lounger. Generally what this means is that given that you have SI in your first slot, right? You have to kind of dip back into your internalized cataloging process from your past experiences, and you kind of need to create connections, like very broad connections that you've made. Sometimes this can be seen as black and white thinking by people. So for instance, Spearhand. If somebody were to look at that, and I'm not critiquing this, I'm just saying from an external source, if somebody were looking in on this, they'd say that this was not a creative name. But to you, it is creative insofar as you're making connections between a very broad set of cataloged experiences from your past through SI. Okay. And then Dave, Dave, you had the two.
I want to skip both of them and pick the one they did in the chat, which is Splash Tray. That's money. That's genius right there. Let's go with that one.
Okay, so even you doing that right now is indicative of SE. Basically, what SE is extroverted sensing. It's the present, being present within reality now. It's always being within in the now, always. And given that you're always in the now, basically reality is always changing, right, to a specific degree. And so you kind of always, like, always moving, always going places, always doing things, always bubbling about. You're very extroverted. And you can actually see this in your first and actually weakest function, which is NI as well. It took you a little while to even come up with the third one, but you took the third one from somebody else, which wasn't even a part of the question. So that's basically how I run this. From these tests or whatever, it proves or it can kind of make an accurate representation of what I kind of went through with typing them already, or you guys already.
So we have an example of kind of what your process sort of looks like, and it's actually pretty crazy that with those little questions and just our answers, and there's a lot that you pick up on. We're talking over the internet. When you're doing it in person or over a video call, you do pick up a lot on their mannerisms, how they look around, how they react to it and stuff like that. I remember when you tested Shane, our kinsman, you commented on how he tilts his head back and looks at the sky and takes a big deep breath before he answers, you know, whereas I'm like, blah, blah, and I just say something, you know what I mean? So there's more that goes into it than just your, you know, what you say. Xavier actually pays attention to your mannerisms and like how you behave as well in person. So there's a lot that goes into this. It's pretty incredible that you can draw that out. So how about we, like, you know, we got some people guessing in the chat. How about we just reveal what our types are and kind of what the archetype is?
Okay. So basically, starting from Tristan is actually an INTJ. He's kind of known as the philosopher in certain with a certain archetypal language within a typological community. And so, like, you know, he's very internal. He's very rigid. Most people would, like, look at him. It's, like, the stereotype for the INTJ, for instance, is that they're very cold-blooded and they kind of have a resting bitch face, you know. And basically, they're kind of set in their ways, right? That's basically what the kind of stereotype is for the INTJ. Whereas when you have the ISTJ, which is also kind of similar to the INTJ, they're actually really close. They are brother types. Basically, what happens is you start with the replacement of NI in the first slot with an INTJ into the SI in the first slot with the ISTJ. What happens is you start to get an even more traditionalist, an even more rigid response to structure and order and categorizing reality. So when Tristan has NITE, basically what he's doing is the same process but in different order with Andre. Andre has one same function as Tristan in this regard and one different function in this regard through this pairing. Whereas Dave, you are an ESTP. This is no doubt about it, dude. Mm-hmm. Like your personality type is known as like the experientialists, or like the people who crave new experiences. And will literally do anything to get it.
The entrepreneur, I think some of them call it.
Some call him the entrepreneur as well, because you guys are really good at money and swindling money and hustling and bustling, you know. But generally speaking, the ESTP is kind of, you know, they're very close to my heart because they're my brother type, you know. We share two of the same functions, but two separate functions. And generally speaking, they're very physically minded people. They're very concrete in the now people. They're very logical, but in the same time, they're still like down to earth and grounded within the present moment. Whereas somebody like me, which I'll reveal my type as an ENTP, is a little bit more abstract and all over the place. You know, I'll literally go on tangents for hours and go down multiple rabbit holes. Like even me interrupting my own speech right now is a sign of me, like my mind going 100 miles per hour. and I kind of have to regulate that a little bit. The ENTPs are known as the debaters. The ESTPs, again, the entrepreneurs, because they can hustle and bustle. ESTPs can also be very addictive personalities. I just got to say that.
Sure.
Very addictive personalities.
Yeah, the ESTP is like, you know, some famous ESTPs are like Donald Trump is a huge one. He's like, you know, the thing. Macho Man Randy Savage, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Dan Marino. You know, who else is out there? You got, you know, Tony Soprano a lot of times is typed as ESTP. There's ESTP is like the hustler, the big personality, the you know, it just, you know, you mentioned the experientialist, somebody that's really big into, you know, experience and sensory stuff and doesn't have time for abstractions. So
yeah, correct.
Most of your athletes, and I mean, obviously I'm not a fucking athlete. A lot of athletes, professional wrestlers, larger than life personalities. Look at Donald.
Dave never had the makings of a varsity athlete.
if we want actually some examples of each of the other types of Andres and Tristans, we have for the INTJ, we got people like Friedrich Nietzsche, right? We got Isaac Newton. We got Elon Musk.
This is Tristan. Big one.
Yeah, Tristan's type. Yeah, Nikola Tesla.
Augustus Caesar.
Yeah, exactly. We got Christopher Hitchens, even though I kind of don't like him at all, you know? And for Andre's a little bit, his type is actually more prevalent in terms of other types within the external world. When you step out of the internet and you go into a job setting, you are going to 100% of the time see an ISTJ because they are so prevalent in the workforce and they're so needed within the workforce. So people like this would probably include like managers or, you know, very successful billionaires such as like, yeah,
corporate and yeah, military officers of any sort, anyone in a hierarchy or anything like
yes,
that.
Yes. And a couple examples, Jeff Bezos, big ISTJ. George Washington is said to be an ISTJ. I don't know how true that is, but for the sake, we'll just say that. Warren Buffett himself, which is like, he's a multi-billionaire, almost a trillionaire, I believe. He's like, he's an ISTJ. He does things in a specific, rigid way. He's some famous ENTPs. You're going to get people like, let's see here. Oof. This is actually hard because I haven't looked at my own type in a while. You know, Borat. Borat's an ENTP, right? He's a fictional character, but the actual actor himself is also an ENTP. The guy who plays Iron Man within the movie Iron Man.
Right, Tony Stark.
Tony Stark, Robert Downey Jr. Fictional character. Robert Downey Jr., yes. We got some other guys like Mao Zedong is said to be the ENTP, which is kind of funny, but but basically just these big debate people, these people who make really big arguments and are very they're kind of mischievous in a way too. Those are ENTPs.
So now that we've kind of had, you know, people have seen how the process works, we've gone over its origins and everything like that. Now we're kind of coming to the second half of the show. Let's talk about how this can be useful to the heathen community, how this could be useful to anybody that's trying to build a community.
Yeah, sure. So basically, when you have a system put in place to where you kind of know who's around you, you can better know, generally speaking, how to deal with these people. At least on a minor level, right? You can know how they cognize the world. You can kind of build a better understanding of how they do things and why they do things, kind of lessening your own annoyance with them over time, you know? But there's also a big benefit in vetting processes that can be utilized with Jungian typology. First of all, it's very efficient, right? You don't got to spend years getting to know somebody, even though like I still would recommend it, you know? But generally speaking, you could literally, through a more efficient means, kind of see how they cognize the world prior to them even joining the kindred or your group or your community. And then through that, you can kind of vet them to see if they're going to be compatible with you or not, or your group or not. I know a few people within our kindred who are actually at least personality-wise, non-compatible. But, you know, there are cases where non-compatible types can get along. You know, if this isn't, like I said, a hard science where everything is set in stone. You know what I mean? So, basically, we can just utilize this to kind of intricately see and understand people when they're coming in, and kind of vice versa, see if they're going to interact with other people in the group in a good way, see if they're going to interact with themselves in a good way, if they're healthy, et cetera. And it goes on from there.
So you mentioned about vetting, and that's kind of, you know, typical, what's a ESTP, is I'm very much interested in how things are useful and can benefit, you know, me or my group or whatever, right? When I first heard this, I was like, you know, whatever. And then I started hearing, well, this could really make a more accurate prediction on people's behavior to help organize them better. And I was like, let's give this a look. So now that I you know, you typed everybody in my kindred, and then you typed everybody in on the bog panel, and it kind of revealed something, right, about you know, the types that get organized into these two groups, right?
Yeah, so it's very interesting. So actually, with you in particular, you tend to orient yourselves more with, actually, in real life, extroverts and kind of sensory-oriented people. But when you step onto the online realm with the bog and with your friend groups and stuff like this in the Neurona Society, then you start getting into the intuitive realm. This is where people – and let me just preface again by saying – the majority of people on the internet are going to be intuitive types. This is just a fact. The internet is a place for abstract ideas to kind of unravel themselves. The real world, not so much, you know? And so a lot of intuitives kind of seek refuge in the internet. But what's interesting about you in particular is that you kind of orient yourselves toward, especially you, orient yourself towards people who are so in tune with you, cognitively speaking, that it's actually kind of scary. It's like, to me, it's very scary, because it's like, how did you do this without even knowing your type? But it's this is just naturally how we do it. You know what I mean? Cognitively, this is just how we come to different spaces and socialize with different people, and, you know, come to friendships with them and relationships and stuff like that.
Yeah, when you said that, that was interesting to me, because, like, before we started talking about this, before you started educating, I had no idea about any of this. I had no, and like, I like the Jodish stuff that Neil John does, but I can't remember all that. That's not my style. You know, I mean, it's not my thing to learn all these tedious details. You know, that would be a bore fest for me. That would be a snoozer to go and like read about NITI, this, that, and then go over to the Jodish and learn about Rahu, K2, all. Just give me the results and what I can do with it. You know what I mean? That's
right.
That's the way that I look at it. But I've always kind of, and, you know, my Jodish said the same thing. It said that I have this propensity and a talent for what Neil John called social hygiene. And it was pretty incredible to see, because I did a lot of reading into my Jodish, and I, you know, I mean, Neil John is really great in how he teaches you about your reading. He doesn't just like drop it on you. He sits and he's very patient. He's an excellent teacher, and it was pretty incredible to hear all of the different traits that you laid out were also parallel to all the different traits that Neil John laid out in the Jodish, which are two completely entirely different. Like things like the Jodish is astrology, like your birth chart, like all that kind of stuff. Typology is literally just behavioral analysis and looking at cognitive functions. So the fact that these two things lined up to me was really, really incredible.
Yeah, yeah. I also have to note that my astrology and my typology had some rather interesting synchronicities there.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's really incredible.
What about you? What about you, Andre? Did you get your Jodish reading, and did it kind of look parallel?
I actually did, and it did look parallel.
Well, that's what's up. See, this kind of, like, I didn't even know this until after I started, like, continuously watching Dave's stream. I thought, for instance, that, like, Jodish was kind of like this this Eastern white girl kind of astrology thing. But that after I started watching the videos with Neil John, I was like, okay, there's something to this. And it wasn't until you actually pointed out to me that there were similarities that I started to get a little, you know, interested and intrigued, because I didn't even know what Jodish was until that point.
Yeah. So, kind of going back to my first point before I went on the tangent about the parallels between these two things, which there absolutely is. They're both, in my mind, they're both extremely useful tools for community building. And this was kind of what I was getting at with what I've been trying to do over the last couple years, you know, with the blog and everything, when we get into more practical, pragmatic topics on these shows, talking about how to adhere to tribal ethics, how to properly build your tribe, and everything like that, because I feel that I have had some really resounding success in organizing people around me to do these things, whether it is for my tribe or it's here for the bog panel. We here on the bog panel, there's zero drama. We get along like we're like peas in a pod over here. Like we are very, right. You know, it's just really great. So it's like if this could streamline the process and give people a tool so that they can organize in a way that they can have a systematic way of social hygiene and organize around people that complement them or are similar to them, then we could have these really efficient, long-lasting, successful groups. Because that is, above all else, when you are organizing people, the number one thing, in my mind at least, is cohesion. Do these people, yeah. do they click? Do their personalities click? Do they get along? Do they like each other's jokes? Are they... we're talking about there's a fella in my kindred that he's not really an outgoing, big personality, kind of colorful character, but me and him share a lot of these cognitive functions. So there's very few wasted words when me and him communicate. It's like I could sit down and talk to him. We could have a 5-minute conversation, know exactly what each other are getting at, and bam, that's over. And I love that. And there's got to be guys like that in your kindred, because a lot of times when people don't share these cognitive functions, you get them in a room together, they're kind of just talking past each other, getting annoyed with each other, not clicking and like stuff like that.
Or one of the things I imagine could be very useful is to know not just which people are going to be compatible inside your, you know, like your kindred or something, but also knowing that if you have, you know, X, Y, and Z person, you're going to need to insert this other person because they're a moderating influence that'll going to make everyone gel together better because they have a specific type that'll make it work out.
And as right. well as what people have, what sort of traits they have to make them good at roles, right? So if you types, like, for example, I'm ESTP. I'm always just going to use myself an example because I can't remember what everybody else is. I'm just gonna be honest with you. But for example, me, ESTP, you get somebody in your tribe, in your clan, or even at your business place that has my traits. If you put him in a job where he does the same thing over and over and over again, he's going to quit in a week. You know what I mean? Yeah. But if you put him on the phone doing sales, you put him out in the front, you give him like the kind of the freedom to like kind of be his own boss and get out and talk to people and convince people of things and stuff like that, then he's going to, you know, you just put this guy in the right spot, right?
Yeah, exactly. The spots are like this is ultimately what I'm getting at a little bit. When you find out how well you your compatibility is with somebody, at least through interpersonal relationships and their cognitive functions, ultimately from that point you can then designate them to a specific spot in the kindred, and they can kind of play their role. You know, I think that's like beyond important for us to do, generally speaking.
Yeah. So, this isn't just some thing for people to, you know, like we said earlier, just like I'm an INFP. Look how cute I am.
To be very practical about it, one of the instances me and Dave worked out very early on was that despite being very different people, me and him get along professionally. We work together extremely well. And in fact, one of the main things that this happens is Dave comes up with ideas and then says, Tristan, make this work somehow. And based on our typology reports, that's exactly how we should be interacting. And that's what we're good at.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you would, because it's like I'm this boisterous extrovert, bouncing around crazy person. And then Tristan's this very, very rigid kind of, you know, go through logical analysis and internal frameworks and all this stuff. But because of that, you know, we work really great together. And Andre, he's like in between. So it's like, we're like a really good team. And then we have Miss Swan now, and she's like, she's on deck too. She's what is she? What's she, Xavier?
ENTJ.
She's basically the same way Andre is in between us. She's just on the other side of Andre.
Yeah. It's pretty cool how that like, you know, played out, that we got all of these people that are so similar together to work together. It really gels. Now, before we get on to our final question, because we're coming up on the end of time here, our boy Vilhjalmer, I'm sorry if I'm saying your name wrong, who's been killing it in the chat with his predictions and everything like that, he wants to know about Jung's model of the psyche diagram and relate MBTI to it, how latter cognitive functions are aspects of our shadow and one must develop them.
Oh, geez.
This is a big one.
This is a really big one. It's going to be super abstract. I would answer this question. I really would. It's just, we're like, in order for me to do this, we would have to have like another like 30 minutes or another 20 minutes for me to go into depth with it.
Let's do this then. So, let's do this. Let's do a part two and we'll talk about the quadrants and the functions and the shadows.
Yes. Okay. That works. And the subtypes.
And
yeah.
The subtypes. That'll be a good show too. And then we also got to get you back on to talk about the destagnation project,
right,
and everything like that.
Right.
So final topic for tonight is going to be, I wanted to let's talk about how you're going about this in a professional way. People could actually hire you, right?
People can hire me. Starting here in a few works, I'm actually going to start doing professional reports for people who are willing to pay. We're going to start a business model off of this, and I'm going to reach out to tribe builders and kindred builders, specifically them, but I also, you know, joiners as well, to kind of help them in regards to like how to orient yourself cognitively speaking to somebody new who might be coming in with a different type of cognition than you. So I'll be offering classes at the highest tier, at the base level tier, it's going to be $50 per reading. Yep. That's for one base session. You're not going to be getting a persona report or anything like that. We're just going to have a one-on-one conversation, get to know each other a little bit, and then I'll give you your type. The $100 the next tier, that's basically, I'm going to be typing you two times, basically just to check for, accuracy. And you're going to be getting a base a persona report, one that's not really too intricate with details about your type, but one that will give you a general outline of your type. And then the monster tier, the biggest tier, is $125. And this ultimately is you're going to be typed three times for the best chances of accuracy. We're going to have multiple times of interaction. It's not just going to be these three times. You're going to be getting a full, complete, intricate, detailed report about what you are, how you deal with problems, how you should deal with certain types, etc. And it goes on from there. And then you'll be getting videos, classes, etc. based on your type.
Yeah. And when he talks about these reports, he gave me and some of us here and some of my kindred these his reports that he did up, and they look sharp, man. This is professional stuff that this guy's putting together. He's got little graphics on them and shows all the different functions and explains them and tells you what you're good at and what you should go for and what you need to work on and things that you need to watch out for. And it's actually really, really great stuff. So, Mr. Xavier, where can people, because we got some guys in the chat, we got my boys Rudra and Andrew the Beard, those are my two buddies, they're interested in hiring you, where can they find you?
Okay, so you can actually find me on, Telegram at XavierBH6, you can message me there. I'm going to be setting up an email, so once I get that situated, you know, I'll give that out to everyone and we can go from there. But as of right now, you can reach out to me at, Telegram at XavierBH6.
Very, very cool. And We'll put a link to his stuff here on the blog here first. So moving forward, if anybody wants to hire him, they can go find the link and go find him and stuff like that. Andrew wants to know if his is going to be done in crayon.
His can be done in crayon if he I'll do it for $1 in crayon. How about that?
$1? That, you know how long is it going to take for crayon? Yeah. Sorry, Mr. Andrew. Sorry. That's going to be $50.
It's all right, dude. I don't have good handwriting, so we won't even be able to pick out his results anyways.
Very, very cool. So, Tristan, Andre, do you have anything to say in closing?
I would just like to say I think the entire situation and the typology thing is very, very cool. And I was very impressed with my typology procedure being done by Xavier. And I would severely encourage everyone to basically at least give it a shot, see what you think about it.
Same thing as Tristan, obviously. Like, the work that it does is really damn good. So you should definitely try to get your topology checked.
Very cool.
Thank you.
Very cool. So, yeah, folks, if you are interested, you can get at him at on Telegram at XavierBH6, right? Does that sound right?
Yep, that's correct.
At XavierBH6. That is XAVIERBH6 on Telegram. And we'll have more contact information moving forward with him. But Xavier, man, excellent job tonight. Thank you so much for coming on and telling us about your very fascinating expertise that you do here. And we are going to shut it down for this evening, folks. So I hope everybody enjoyed the show tonight. And everybody reaches out to Xavier and gets your typology report so you may find use in it and move forward with your community building and tribe building or possibly even business adventures. So that's going to be it for this evening, folks. Thank you so much again for tuning into The Bog, which is live here on the Dave Martell channel every single Monday and Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. You like The Bog, you support The Bog, make sure you go to patreon.com/TheBog and sign up. There's a tier for everybody, $5 all the way up to $50. You get a sticker. You could get a mug. You could get the RSS feed to audio of every single show that we do to listen to on your commutes, in your car, at work, or at the gym. Help us keep the lights on at patreon.com/TheBog. If you want to support us another way, make sure you go to shop.spreadshirt.com/BogShop and get some sweet Bog merch, t-shirts, hoodies, hats, dresses, backpacks, all that kind of stuff. Shop.spreadshirt.com/BogShop. And if you want to check out some Jodish, like we mentioned earlier, make sure you go to facebook.com/IronAgeJodish and check out our boy Neil John. At least go check him out. You got to go give him a like. He's really, really great. Incredible, authentic, ancient Vedic astrology. This stuff is super, super cool. So go over to facebook.com/IronAgeJodish. Shoot him a message. If you decide to get a reading, make sure to tell him Big Dave sent you. Tell him Big Dave sent you. Well, like always, we're going to raise a horn to our most exalted patrons. That is going to be Mr. Corey and our very own Andre. Hail to them, and hail to each and every one of you Bog Lords and Bog Maidens. I hope you guys have a wonderful, safe, and exciting, happy 4th of July to all my Americans. And I hope everybody, all the Canadians out there had a great Canada Day. We're going to see you guys next week here on The Bog, Monday, 6 p.m. Eastern. Hail.